It's a long time since I've been able to do that. I rather enjoyed that. Good evening, everyone. It's lovely to see you all, especially from the neck downwards. Welcome to this cabinet meeting on the 10th of June, 2021. This meeting is being recorded, and the sound recording subsequently made available via the council's website. In addition, under the Local Authorities, Executive Arrangements, Meetings and Access to Information, England Regulations 2012, other people may film, record, tweet or blog from this meeting. The use of any such images or sound recordings is not under the Council's control. So, start off with item one, which is apologies. We actually have three apologies this evening. One is from Councillor Barclay, one is from Councillor Harper-Davies and one is from Councillor Bailey. So we're now on to item two, which is disclosure of pecuniary and personal interests. If any councillors present have any disclosures they need to make, can you please raise your hand? Not a yellow one this time. Ah, Councillor Smidovich.
Yes, I don't know if I'm recording or not. It's been so long since I used this thing. Yes, I want to express the point that I have raised things and supported various planning applications or comments, particularly in relation to the local plan, but they have been resolved by the officers in advance, so I've come to this meeting with an open mind.
Splendid. Thank you very much, Councillor. So, we have no other disclosures. So, we now go on to item three, which is the leader's announcements. So, the only thing that's happened, actually, since I had the capacity to talk about leader's announcements has actually been the announcement of the town deal award of £17 million, which was made a couple of days ago, which is extremely good news for Loughborough. It will come with the ability to put in a significant amount of private capital as well, and will probably represent one of the biggest investments that we've been able to make in the town of Loughborough for a generation or more. And so we start work on that pretty soon. We'll get the town deal board back together and start working on the projects as soon as we can. So extremely good news for Loughborough, and we're very, very pleased as a board. So now move on to item four, which is the minutes of the previous meeting. We've actually got two sets of minutes to approve this evening. One is the formal meeting, which was the last one we did formally as online, which is the 8th of April. So can I start with those? Is everyone happy to approve those meetings? Mm-hmm. Okay, I can see hands going up. Thank you very much. And then the second one was the 10th of May, 2021. That was an informal meeting for noting. And again, is everyone happy with the minutes from that meeting? Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much. Those are approved, and I have signed those off for Laura to take at the end of the meeting. So we now move on to item five, questions under Cabinet Procedure 10.7. Well, this evening we do actually have a question that has been submitted by Mr. Hunt relating to houses of in multiple occupation. Councillor, I get so used to referring to everyone as Councillor. Mr. Hunt, you've received an answer, and I know you have some supplementary points that you have raised as well. Do you want to read out those supplementary points? I think if you press the one that your finger's over, you should be fine.
Any particular question, I'm just going to quickly go through some clarifications on each one. On the first one, can I assume that the reply that the council has no evidence... Sorry, I'll start that again. Can I assume from the reply that the council has no evidence to support the need for HMOs? It's a kind of yes or no question, really.
Do you want to go through all of them, and then I can respond to them? That's probably the best way. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
The second one is, and obviously referring to question two, doesn't the council take housing need into account when responding to planning applications for the purpose-built student accommodation, which competes directly with HMOs? So it's about the housing need. And the third one was it concerns the evidence presented in the three-year study by Smith and Carola, commissioned by the Borough Council, which presents ward-by-ward figures for HMOs, coupled with that, we must have copious records of Article 4 direction applications. So doesn't this indicate where future trends in HMO applications will go so that it can be evidenced and published? That was in answer to the a question that we couldn't estimate the future. Question three. The three-year study prevents... Sorry, I've just read that one, haven't I? Four. Yeah. I was asking if there were any estimates of extra numbers of HMOs that would be generated by each of the different thresholds. Doesn't the council have any idea what these figures might be?
Thank you very much, Mr. Hunt. So I have some answers for you, so you can go away with the answer. So in relation to your first supplementary question in relation to evidence, the council does not have evidence to support the need for HMOs because they are market-led, which I think is hopefully reasonably clear. In relation to question two about purpose-built accommodation, the council does not take into account housing need when assessing planning applications for purpose-built student accommodation because it is quite bespoke. In relation to supplementary question three, the HMO study published in December 2018 provides information on the concentration pattern of HMOs in Loughborough. Inferences may be taken about the market trends in the location of HMOs from the databases used to inform the study. However, this data cannot be published and is considered to be exempt from FOI and EIR rules. In relation to your supplementary question four, the council does not have estimates of the extra number of HMOs that would be generated at different thresholds. The council already has a 20% threshold in place, and the proposal in the pre-submission local plan to reduce this to 10% is unlikely to generate additional HMOs as a consequence. Rather, it is more likely to change the pattern location of HMOs across the town over time. So hopefully...
That's what I expect you to say.
That's all four of them. Okay, right. Thank you very much, Mr. Hunt.
Okay.
Good evening. Okay, I think we're going to do a quick switch around at the moment. We have Councillor Seasom coming in. All right, a little bit of cleaning. Okay, well, look, I'll carry on for a little bit because what we're going to do to aid the bit of time is actually take item 7 first, if that's okay, which is the neighbourhood plans for Quinnenborough, Rothley and the Wolds. So we've got three neighbourhood plans to approve this evening. Richard Bennett is our head of planning and regeneration. He's here to assist with any items in the report. What I'm going to do in the absence of Councillor Bailey is just say how much I appreciate the work that those three areas have gone into to actually create their neighbourhood plans. I know there's a significant amount of work involved, and to take on the responsibility to start the process really does mean that you're committing 1 or 2 years of your free time to coordinate and pull together successfully their neighbourhood plans, to actually then obviously go out to the electorate, and in all three cases the electorate very happily said yes to the three neighbourhood plans, and as a result they're here this evening to for us to take the next stage further. So Richard, is there anything else you wish to add in relation to the document? Obviously, we'll take it as read, but is there anything else that you wish to add before we start any discussion?
Thank you, Leader. I don't think so. I think the report's relatively straightforward in that respect. You know, we do have a statutory need to make these neighbourhood plans under the legislation, and we have to do that within 8 weeks. So we are within that timescale. So it's before members tonight for that purpose.
Thank you very much. Are there any points that anyone wishes to raise from Cabinet in that case? I'm looking around, there are no hands going up. So again, I'd say congratulations to those three areas. I would like to move officer recommendations 1 to 4 for the reasons 1 to 4 on page 1035. And if I can ask Councillor Poland to second.
Thank you, Leader. Yes, just to add my thanks to the work that people have done on all of them, especially the one in Quenenborough, which is in my county division. I know the hard work that has gone into that, and it'll be wonderful for the village, and that was reflected in the turnout. Very happy to second.
Thank you very much. Can I ask for a vote in favour? Can I see that first? That's everyone, so in which case there are no votes against and no abstentions, so that item is approved. Thank you very much. Okay, we're now going to go back to item 6, which is the Charnwood Local Plan pre-submission consultation and submission. There is a Scrutiny Commission report attached to this, so welcome to Councillor Seaton, who's now taken her sanitised seat. I would like to ask you now, Councillor, if you'd like to present the report on behalf of the Scrutiny Commission, and afterwards we will ask you any questions of clarification before we then start the debate and discussion on the item itself. So over to you, Councillor.
Thank you very much, Chair. When I come most of the times to present something to the Cabinet, it will be taken as read, but I think this is a very important subject issue to talk about. So although you have got the questions and answers, 20 of them in-depth questioning, I would like to highlight a few of them if that's okay. First of all, after getting over the shock of over 1,000 pages to scrutinise and having many members of the committee ring me up and said, how logistically can we do this? I've got to say that Claire Clark came to our rescue. So thank you very much. And so we gratefully received her introduction and explanation as to what we were there for and what we had to do and why we were scrutinising it. We were informed that the previous scrutinies, the one in 2019 and 2020, informed the plan as it stands today and it's ready for its formal stage of consultation. The key issues of previous scrutiny were lack of reference to infrastructure. And we were explained that early ages of the plan made it difficult for infrastructure to providers to engage with the council. But they are now able to plan with more confidence as the plan gets meat on its bones kind of thing. The school provisions in certain areas. And we've gone for critical mass. The increasing of houses in some areas has allowed the provision of new schools and has satisfied that issue. The other one was not ambitious enough to climate change. And adding the climate change chapter to the plan has addressed this issue. And the 10% net gain for biodiversity was explained if the site could not achieve that. That it will be elsewhere in the near vicinity of the borough. And the other one was absence of flexibility. 10% has been added to the housing figures to help maintain a 5-year housing supply. Other concerns were car parking, flooding, neighbourhood plans and areas of separation. But however, discussing all of this and getting our answers, and we thank the officers for their help on Monday, but also we acknowledge the amount of work that has been completed in detailing the plan, and we feel that the Cabinet should approve the recommendations as set out. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Councillor Seaton, and thank you very much also to the scrutiny team for, as you said, it is a significant document, and for giving it the attention and the time, and quite clearly from what you've just said, and also from the report and summary that came through to us, it was a pretty thorough discussion on the subject. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
Can I ask to start off with, were there any points of clarification that anyone wishes to ask Councillor Season before we move on? No points of clarification. So thank you very much, Councillor Season, and we will again please pass our thanks on to the committee, hopefully we will now have a chance to discuss the paper itself by ourselves as well. Thank you.
As it goes at the moment, am I allowed to stay for that, or do I have to vacate and desanitise?
I think you're allowed to stay. I think numbers-wise we're fine.
Thank you.
So by all means, stay seated. There's nobody else to take your seat anyway, so you're not going to be sanitised out of the room, so don't worry. Yes. Okay, well, look, thank you very much. And we obviously have Richard Bennett, who's our Head of Planning and Regeneration, with us, and also, as Councillor Season mentioned, Claire Clark, who's our Group Leader for Plans, Policies and Placemaking, who I know is probably responsible for most of those 1,000 pages, along with her team. So welcome to both of you this evening. I'd really just like to start by saying how important this local plan is for us as an organisation. This is probably our most significant document that we'll prepare as councillors. It contains, obviously, not only the work of many individuals over a substantial period of time, starting work on this in 2015 when we pretty well finished the last plan, but also pulling together all the key points to make a positive well-researched and supported planning document. Now, obviously, we're responding to the government's targets, the housing targets. We're also responding to national policy. In addition to that, we're also trying to respond to all the other factors that we've looked at, whether it's biodiversity or whether it's transport links, education, health, etc. There has been a substantial amount of consultation on the draft plans, and that's helped to shape the plan that we have with us this evening. For those who have sort of lived and breathed this document, they will know full well that some sites that maybe had originally been put forward through participation from residents and commentary from further work from officers, some of those sites have actually come out of the document and others have actually gone in instead. So, you know, this has been a very, very live document. Certainly the assumption that somehow that we're playing lip service to consultation, I think has been proved wrong by this document and its sort of birth and development. But it is an extraordinarily important document. Without having a plan, the lack of a five-year supply not only will perpetuate but also result in a huge quantity of unwanted and unplanned development across our borough. All of us at some point have come across development sites that have clearly been unwanted by the local community, but actually even worse, through the lack of advanced planning, has caused additional strains onto the infrastructure that supports our communities, whether it be doctors, education, schools, or even bus routes and transport. So it's important to have a plan that tries to pull this together, and this plan goes all the way out to 2037. It allows for a significant number of not only houses, but also retail space, employment, land, all of the things that mean that we can operate as a borough, and our borough can actually support not only its businesses and its enterprise, but it will also enable people to live where they want to live, fortunately, with us here in Charnwood. We are very popular for good reasons, and that means that the housing numbers that we've been presented by the government are quite significant challenges. But we've tried to go about this in a way that means that we have sustainable development that satisfies the government's requirements as far as the housing numbers are concerned, but also will hopefully generate a long-lasting five-year supply as the development sites are moved through from planning to development and then finally become people's homes. And that's critical because the lack of a five-year supply will harm us, and as a result, the only way that we can actually solve that is by actually having a plan in place and enabling us to to make sure that our future development is controlled and regulated. So we're at a point this evening where our plan has come to Cabinet. If approved this evening, it will go on to full council in a couple of weeks' time. And then if that's successful, it will then go out to further consultation, final consultation stage, before being submitted to the Planning Inspectorate for examination. And that is quite a significant stage because the local plan examination is an extraordinarily robust and thorough process. And certainly any resident, any organisation that has raised concerns about the plan up to this point will have not only the consultation but also the planning examination stage to raise concerns or issues again. And they will be overseen by a planning inspector who will then judge in the way that a court judge does, judge the evidence presented to determine whether the document is sound and can be adopted by us as a local authority to be our core planning document until 2037. So it's a very important evening, but actually it's the start of quite a long process and one that will hopefully within the year result in us being able to actually adopt a plan, which currently we certainly need to do. So with that, Mr. Bennett and Claire, is there anything that you wish to add before we move on to discussing the plan itself?
If I may, Leader, I have just prepared a few notes, and forgive me if I do just tread on your toes for what you've said. There are one or two things that are similar, but as you have said, this report is bringing the pre-submission local plan before Cabinet members tonight for consideration as the preferred strategy for Charnwood up to 2037, and that subject to any amendments that may be necessary, the plan and its supporting documents be referred to Council on the 21st of June, with a recommendation that they are published for consultation and be submitted to the Secretary of State for that examination. So members will be aware that there is a statutory requirement to prepare a local plan and to keep it up to date. So that's what we've been doing here. The current local plan is more than 5 years old now, so it does need to be replaced. And this is one of the reasons why we don't have a five-year supply at the moment. So the rules for preparing local plans are set out in legislation and in the National Planning Policy Framework, with further guidance provided in the Planning Practice Guide. And they require us to prepare local plans that look forward for at least 15 years from their adoption date, which is why we're going out to 2037. And they must be based on evidence and supported by sustainability appraisal. And, of course, you've seen the appendices on the agenda tonight, so you can see the depth of that work. And the plans should set a vision and address housing, economic, social and environmental needs. And they should achieve sustainable development overall and be prepared positively and shaped by early and effective engagement. So, as you've said, Leader, the local plan is a very significant component in the in the delivery of the Council's corporate strategy, as well as an important means of delivery for the strategies of partners and other stakeholders. And indeed, the Council has engaged very positively with key partners under the duty to cooperate in establishing statements of common ground on a number of issues, and most notably on strategic planning matters, including the city's unmet housing needs. And it is the culmination of a substantial amount of work, as you've said, carried out over the last 5 years, in fact. Subject to members' approval on the 21st of June, it will be submitted to the Secretary of State, and an independent planning inspector will then consider if the duty to cooperate has been met and if the plan meets the four tests of soundness. So just to remind members, actually, the journey we've been on, the initial work started in very early 2016, so no sooner was the ink dry on the core strategy in November 2015. You know, in the January of 2016, we started on its replacement. And that was with consultation on the issues and scope of the plan, which was held in the summer of 2016, with further consultation in 2018 on the scale of development required and the development strategy. And the work and the responses received from that informed the draft local plan, which went out in November, December 2019. And we published a statement of consultation summarising all the comments received on the draft local plan and providing a response just before the pandemic in March 2020. So the document that you got before you tonight in the appendix, the pre-submission plan, builds on all of that work and takes account of the engagement carried out with stakeholders, partners and the public and the extensive evidence base. And that plan has been drafted and it has been shaped through the council's scrutiny processes, as explained in part A of the report, and we've heard from Councillor Seaton tonight on that. And we've also provided several technical briefings for all ward councillors on a variety of topics over that period as well. So the report before you tonight, then, in part B of that, it gives you an overview of the local plan itself, and it explains the scale of housing required. It's just under 20,000 homes, of which about 11,000 already have planning permission. And it summarises the development strategy, which is of urban concentration and intensification, with some dispersal beyond that, with the most environmentally sensitive areas, such as those areas of separation, green wedges and the countryside, being protected. It also sets out the proposed topic-based policies, such as for things like design, employment, town centres and the environment, as well as place-based policies for Loughborough, Shepshed, service centres in the countryside to ensure that local priorities are met. And it reaffirms the policies for each of the sustainable urban extensions and the Loughborough Science and Enterprise Park. We've heard about infrastructure tonight from Councillor Seaton, and the plan includes an infrastructure delivery plan and schedule that sets out the infrastructure required to support the growth that's been identified in the plan and also gives its cost and the timescales for delivery. And that document will remain live throughout the remaining plan preparation process and will be updated as required as we go forward. I must also draw members' attention to the supplementary report on the agenda tonight. This report explains that a ministerial statement on affordable housing was made on the 28th of May, which was just after this Cabinet agenda was published. And that statement explains the government's approach to first homes and the new model for shared ownership units, and that those changes will take effect from the 28th of June 2021. Officers considered those changes and felt that they were too significant to be dealt with under the recommendations in the report for delegation to make changes to the plan, and therefore those amendments are here in a supplementary report to be considered by members tonight, along with the changes shown tracked in the appendix to that supplementary report. And consequently, there's a further recommendation for members to consider tonight in relation to those proposed changes. So, in terms of next steps, Leader, if members are minded to support the recommendations tonight, the plan and its supporting documents will be referred to Council on the 21st of June. And subject to the outcome of that meeting, it will be published for consultation on the 12th of July for 6 weeks, as required by the regulations. And the consultation which is proposed will follow the format in Appendix G of the report tonight, which in turn reflects the approved statement of community involvement, which members considered earlier. And after that consultation period has ended, officers will then bring together all of the comments that have been made, summarise them and submit those along with the plan and the supporting documents to the Secretary of State for that examination. Now, before the hearing session start, the inspector will do preliminary checks on the plan and the submitted information to ensure that the duty to cooperate has been met and to check for any fundamental flaws. But after that point, it's in the hands of the inspector to go through that, testing the plan against those soundness tests that I mentioned earlier. So, Leader, with that, I'm very happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Richard. I've made note of the obviously the additional recommendation on the supplementary paper I think also in the main recommendations as well, it talks about minor amendments in collaboration with the cabinet lead. I think given my involvement and also given the significance of this paper to the authority, I'd like to be added to that as well. So I'll make an amendment that it's actually a two cabinet member collaboration on any changes. Right. So I'm sure plenty of questions. I'm sure everyone's got dog-eared documents and screens that probably got finger marks all over them from reading the documentation. Can I ask Councillor Smedovic, you got your finger up first?
Yes.
So you start.
Yes, thank you. My screen keeps dying, so I haven't been able to put too many finger marks to nudge me where I need to. Through you, Leader, I do have a few points. First of all, though, I would like to express my gratitude to Richard's team, particularly Claire and Michael Hopkinson, who isn't here tonight. They have spent a considerable amount of time with my residents, and it genuinely has been appreciated, been very helpful, saved me hours of work as well, but don't note that. Obviously, the local green space is one aspect that has been brought up, and they've had advice on how to deal with that following the approval of this draft strategy. But could I just check, would this particular aspect of the green space, as it links with the MPPF, be something that would come under a heading of testing the principles of planning when it comes to the inspector's role? That's the first question. Then just a point that I want to say again, thank you. We had a presentation on biodiversity, and that's featured quite considerably in your recommendations today. And I think all the councillors who attended that event were pleasantly enlightened with what they heard. So that it was a very useful training session that was very much appreciated. So at the moment, those are the two points I wanted to make, but would be appreciate a comment on the testing of principles.
Would like to pick that up. Richard?
Thank you, Leader. I'll have a go at that one. So I think the question Councillor Smedovic was asking was, will the inspector test the soundness of the plan with regard to the assessment of a site against the MPPF criteria and its inclusion or otherwise in the plan as a local green space? Is that correct? And the answer to that is, if the residents who are interested in bringing a site forward as an area of local green space submit a representation through the process, making it clear that they feel that the MPPF criteria have or haven't been followed correctly, then that would be a matter that would be tested as a test of soundness. So yes.
Okay. I'm looking around, fingers are going up. Councillor Retway, do you want to go first?
Yeah. Thank you. First of all, it's to do with the Leicester urban area. I've mentioned this previously when we've talked about it, but I think it's just worth highlighting again. So where we've got areas across the border, so you've got sort of Birstall, Thurmaston, that cross to the city, and we know the city have got their own local plan, it's being able to highlight to residents what infrastructure sits on the city side that will affect Charnwood residents. So where there's a new school being built, but it's being built by the city rather than by Charnwood, but it will actually be the catchment school for new properties that are going to be built in Charnwood. So can we work on a way of making sure that when residents look at our local plan, that they're aware of something that might affect our houses that actually sit across the city border? So that's the first point. Second point is to do with page 43. So it's to do with retail space. So we've got... I'll read from this section if I could just find it.
quickly. So it says there's no quantitative need for any new floor space for food shopping in Charnwood up to 2036, and only a need post 2028 for between 3,000 and 4,500 square metres for new non-food shopping. It's to do with the food side of it, really, is my question. Are we saying that if a supermarket comes to us in Charnwood, wants a planning application to put a new supermarket in, that we're going to say no because we're saying in our local plan that there's no need for it? It just seems a bit of a strange one, given that the population growth is going to grow fairly significantly between now and 2036. And we're saying that we don't think that there's going to be any need for new food suppliers. So that's the second point. And then third point is more just a comment, really, to do with page 211, where we said we're retaining existing levels of community accessible sports halls and fitness provision in the borough as a minimum. I just want to say I'm really happy to see that in there. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Claire, would you like to say this?
Thank you. Yes, so the first question was in relation to Leicester urban area, and yes, there is... there are things going on with the Leicester local plan that are relevant and important for Charnwood residents, and so it is really important that we make people aware. I think there's a couple of ways we can do that. One is in the presentations that we provide, briefing people on the local plan, including when we're talking to particular parishes. We will definitely be mentioning that as part of those individual briefings. And then I think the other opportunity is on the frequently asked questions page, which we've set up already, because some people are obviously, you know, aware it's coming to the public domain, have started looking for information, and we're constantly changing that. So that's something else that we'll look to add into the frequently asked questions page on that front. And I suppose just to also say on that front that we're working very closely with Leicester City to understand how our growth and their growth work together. In terms of the retail space, note if a supermarket was looking to locate within the borough, we would look at each application on its own merits. The issue that we were looking at through the study that was done was whether or not we should be planning space. And there wasn't a need, and there's capacity, sufficient capacity in food retailing across the borough to cope with the growth that's coming. And so that wasn't something we needed to plan for, especially. And then your final point was just on the sports, which, yeah, we welcome that comment. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Before I go to Councillor Poland, can I ask a quick supplementary on that point? So I appreciate the work on retail need was quite extensive. From memory, it was probably pre-pandemic, wasn't it? And I was just wondering how that's likely to be tested through the examination period, given the fact that there will no doubt be questions raised as to how reliable, given sort of the movement towards online, how reliable some of that data is, given the timescales.
Thank you, Leader. I think it's a really important point, and it's one that we've been thinking about ourselves in terms of how we take account of the pandemic in the local plan. The issue is that normal service hasn't really resumed in the country, so we don't really know what the pattern's going to be when everyone goes back to the new normal. So it's very difficult to plan for that, and that is the nature of thinking ahead 15 years. It's very difficult to know what's coming. But I suppose the reassurance comes that we were reviewing this plan as we have with the core strategy. This process doesn't stop. It's a continuous process. And so in 5 years' time, again, we'll be expected to review the plan. And if it's not an appropriate strategy for the current situation, then we'll have to make those amendments. But we will do a topic paper, I suspect, on this issue of the pandemic and whether or not we think there are any significant things that we need to be aware of in terms of our policies. But we are testing that constantly ourselves, but it's just very difficult to have an answer to that at this stage.
Thank you very much, Claire. Councillor Poland, I think you had your hand up.
Thank you, Leader. Three questions, I guess, really. In terms of, there's quite a few sites within my ward, and indeed every ward, where people have come to me and said, yes, but this, have we thought about sewage systems, road capacities and so forth? And really, my understanding, and really just confirmation of if my understanding is correct, is that the local plan is a strategic document, so you haven't at this stage looked at whether Oldgate Road in Thrussington has the adequate sewage system. That's a strategic plan, and then once this is passed, at that point it still has to go through the usual planning process where those kind of questions will come to the fore, and if it's not suitable for a site, it won't get planning permission, even if it is in the local plan. So I really want that clarification if that's okay. To what extent do we future-proof development? I guess, leading on from what the leader said, there are a lot of unknown unknowns, as they say, but there are some things I think we can see coming in quite a big way, and that's going to be things like electric vehicles, renewable energy sources and so forth. To what extent does this plan allow for that in terms of making provision for electric points? Does it talk about things like solar panels? Does it and so forth? Are they, you know, things that in the past, obviously there were houses built when before we knew that electric vehicles were going to be a thing, so there's no charging points, you know, whereas obviously going forward we can see that. And I think if we don't do that now, I think we're potentially missing a huge opportunity in storing up problems for the future. And the third one for me is just in terms of the infrastructure I touched on in my first question. Knowing that, again, one of the big questions I get is, okay, so what about X, Y, and Z issues in our village? As I said, sewage system in Trussington is one, roads in Quenneborough and others, and others. To what extent is that known in advance? So it's almost, for want of a better description, a bit like not a sweetener, but you go, look, we understand those are issues, and this plan allows for those specific projects in specific areas. Or is it more the case that those are established on a Section 106 basis, application by application, which obviously leads the risk that any particular application might not be enough to deliver the improvements required? Thank you. I'll leave it there.
Who's pushing the button? Is Richard? Okay.
Did I beat it to it? Perhaps Claire might want to come in on the detail, but take the first one. To what extent is the local plan strategic and dealing with those specific issues that the local residents are very familiar with, but perhaps officers sitting in the office in Loughborough perhaps aren't as quite aware well aware of as local residents. I think we would say that. We know enough about the allocations to come to a view as to whether we think they're deliverable, and that's one of the key tests for the local plan examination process. Sitting here now, I we don't know whether the sewage system is at capacity or not. But through the process of preparing the plan, obviously we are consulting with the key utility providers and stakeholders to understand if there are any particular pinch points in utility provision. Obviously, the drains are dealt with through a different regime than planning. But if there was a fundamental constraint to those sites coming forward, it's very unlikely that they'd made it this far through the process. So that's the first thing to say. In terms of EV vehicles, that's a point well made. We tried to be really quite stretching in our last core strategy around climate change. I think what was very clear is that trying to impose lots of measures to reduce the impact on the climate and reduce carbon footprint and this sort of stuff rendered loaded a lot of cost on development such that would, with our affordable housing requirements, would render sites unviable. So the approach that we take through this plan is to encourage measures to improve the the energy efficiency and minimise the impact of these dwellings on the environment. So the building control regime is leading on some of this stuff around climate change. So a lot of what's not in the policy will be met through the building regulations, actually. particularly things like gas boilers and stuff like that. But what I would point your attention to is policy CC6, which is the EV charging point policy, where we seek to get a charging point for each of the residential units in the borough, and also in one charging point for every 5 parking spaces, I think it is on. I'm just looking. Yeah, phone a friend. Yes, that's right. So we do have that policy in place. And the other thing to say actually is that, you know, there is much greater awareness about climate change these days, and you know, people that are looking to purchase new houses are looking for houses that are more energy efficient in the first instance. You know, that actually don't need heating or solar panels on the roof, because they are inherently warmer properties through their construction. And benefit from natural light and those sorts of things, so they don't need lighting until much later in the day. So that's what people are starting to choose when they're making their purchasing decisions. So I think we'll see more of that as we go forward. I think it's the Greta effect, so to speak. So, yes, forgive me, I forgot the third question. So, thank you, Councillor Pollen, through your leader. The infrastructure schedule sets out the essential and desirable infrastructure for all of the sites that are allocated in the plan. And indeed, you will see in some of those allocated site policies, specific things are necessary to enable those developments to go ahead. It's not an extensive list. It's the key things that are necessary to make it deliverable and viable going forward.
Okay, thanks a lot. Before I come to Councillor Mercer, can I just ask one additional point on that, which is actually about collaboration, obviously, with partners. Makes reference, obviously, to the CCG and discussions to do with health provision. Clearly, the references to in connection with education, and particularly about the sort of the scale of some development to make sure that new primary schools, etc., can be delivered and justified within communities. But also touched on again in the report about the road infrastructure, and it's one of the points I know Councillor Poland's obviously made reference to, but has come up a lot from residents, which is, you know, the traffic's too much. I mean, even coming here this evening, I know probably Councillor Boger and myself probably came across gridlock in Loughborough, which has become quite rare in the last year and a bit. But it's those sort of issues, and we know from the report that you've talked about some of the, you know, the existing road conditions that are already difficult, certainly from our perspective. I appreciate probably if you came from central London, it probably wouldn't be, but from our perspective, this is quite a lot of traffic. And the issue is about how that relationship, for instance, with the Highways Authority, you know, you talked about the relationship, obviously, with the Education Authority as well, but how those relationships are progressing and how the discussions are, because obviously, you know, by the sounds of it, there have been a huge number of discussions with all of those parties, at County Hall in particular, but elsewhere, to make sure that they understand how this plan is being put together. It is, you know, the largest plan in Leicestershire, and clearly, you know, all of us need to make sure that once our development is in, that it's accessible and it's usable, and our residents still have access to all the facilities they require.
Yes, thank you, Leader. And it is right. I mean, we've done an awful lot of work on transport and on education to understand the issues around capacity. It is also right that, you know, the new local plan can't deal with an existing problem. It's got to deal with the impacts arising from the new growth that we're planning for. Nevertheless, we do know that there are, you know, issues of capacity on the strategic road network that's not functioning properly, you know, the A46 and the M1, and that's understood by, you know, Highways England, and you know, they're going through a process to improve those networks through, you know, the normal government funding processes. And of course, we know that, you know, on the local road network, it falls under the control of the County Highway Authority and the City Highway Authority, indeed, on the city side of the boundary. you know, there are pinch points all over the borough, and it's, the network's not functioning as well as we would like. We understand all that, and the work that we've done to model the impacts of growth that are in the plan, we have identified a package of mitigation for each of the areas of the borough which are affordable and will mitigate the impact of development, assuming, of course, that the strategic road network is functioning correctly as it should do. And I think we're working very carefully and diligently with the Highway Authority. We understand that the key anxieties around how those mitigations, those measures to relieve the growth, how they will be delivered over the lifetime of the plan, particularly given that it's a package-based approach. So it's not a case of site A will provide X, Y, and Z. It's a case of a number of sites will contribute towards the whole, and so it's the proportional share that each of those sites will make to that mitigation. We have to work that out with the County Council, and so we've had a number of very positive meetings with them to understand how we can map that out. So when we come to make the decisions through the development management process, that residents as well as the promoters of development know where they stand in terms of infrastructure when it comes forward and its cost and its viability. So it's been very positive, and a similar approach has been taken on the education side as well. And we've had some very constructive meetings with the Education Authority around, the capacity of existing schools and where new schools are actually needed. We've been able to identify new sites for homes to help pay for those schools to ensure that we've got the right capacity for places in the right parts of the borough going forward. So hopefully that gives members some assurance around those issues.
Okay, thank you very much for that, Richard. Councillor Mercer.
Thank you, Leader. Richard, going on from your remark about CC6 electric vehicle charging points, I'm sure it's impossible for a document this big to be kept completely up to date, but on page 190, the government has changed its strategy. It says here that at least half of new cars by 2030 will be ultra low emission. In fact, they're now saying no new cars from 2030 will be fossil fueled at all, which is a fairly significant change. So presumably, little changes like that you'll incorporate into the strategy. So I'm not criticising. I'm just saying things change. But my question is about, and it's a question I've asked Claire before. It says we require new developments to make provision, and then lower down it says we support new developments. Now, presumably, until the government changes the regulations, you can't actually force developers to do this. You can only ask them nicely to do this. And the third point is, you said that we would expect them to put one charging point per five cars, and for commercial developments with more than 10 parking spaces. Is there any reason why we're not actually expecting that requirement to be encouraged or later imposed on developments which are undergoing major renovation, which is what the government suggested in the first place? Page 191.
Thank you. Through you, Leader. Just to note that the first point you said about changing government policy, I'll just refer you back to what Claire was saying earlier on about the plan will be kept under review. Things are changing at quite a fast rate, as technological advances are being made around electric vehicles and what have you, and who knows, in 5 years' time we might be talking about hydrogen fuel vehicles rather than plug-in type electric vehicles, but we'll worry about that another day. With regard to the other parts of your question, I'm going to phone a friend, if that's okay, and ask Claire if she'd like to help us with that technical detail.
Yeah, thank you. So the wording is an important point, actually. So we say we'll support development that provides an electric charge point for each new residential dwelling with a dedicated car parking space. That also suggests we won't support development that doesn't do that. So it is quite a strong policy framework, and that is something, if it's taken through examination and is agreed, we can then implement through our development management process. So it would be a requirement on developers. And like I say, it's an important thing that's tested through the examination process, and people are given the opportunity to say whether they think that is practical and viable. We believe it is, but that's what will be tested. In terms of renovations, it's not something we've looked to pursue as part of this policy. This is obviously a new policy area for us. We're looking to make quite a big stride, I think, from in terms of this issue, moving forward to asking for every single new dwelling with a dedicated space to have a charging point. And I think, going forward, as this becomes more routine as part of developments, then certainly that's something you might look to amend the policy next time round to include opportunities where there's... I suppose the key issue is whether there's a planning application required. So if you renovate a property, you might not need planning permission. So we've got no involvement as a planning authority. But there might be instances where there's a change of use or, there is a need for a planning application. And you're right, we're not going to pick those up through this policy. So that's something we can think about in a review going forward.
Okay, thank you very much. Councillor Rawlings.
Thank you. Mine are more observations, really, rather than questions. I think, again, echo comments about thanking officers for the work. It's clearly a significant document, and the appendices as well. I think, from my point of view, it's pleasing to see we've shifted from reliance on larger sites to a much broader spread of smaller and larger sites across the borough, which I think gives us a far better chance of achieving and maintaining a five-year housing land supply, which, of course, is our ultimate goal as a local authority. The second big change, I think, is we're not just bolting on climate change, we're actually seeing that as a thread throughout the document. So each part of this is looking at the climate impact and how that's new development's going to impact on climate change and the council's ambition to be a place leader on that. So I think seeing that as not just a bolt-on strategy or policy or chapter is good, and we're seeing that as an absolute thread throughout this whole document. So overall, it's looking good so far. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Councillor Boker, no. Okay. Right. I think we're probably, unless anyone else has any further questions, I can hear the clock chiming, which maybe that's significant. Okay, look, I think we've probably finished the questions and the debate. I mean, I'd echo the comments that I think several councillors have made about the quantity of work put into this document. I mean, I remember the discussions, I think, probably in 2015 about it's now time to start planning the next one. And the fact that it was January 2016, certainly I think the discussions were probably halfway through May, if not probably 2015, if not probably even earlier than that, before we'd actually even signed off the last one. I can remember Councillor Vardy saying, oh, you think we're finished? We haven't finished. We're still going. But, it's a huge amount of work. Obviously, the supplementary paper that we've received today, I think, indicates how fluid planning is. Unfortunately, ministers, those pesky ministers, have a habit of talking and coming up with new policy, which I suspect every planning officer in Britain probably then sighs and reaches for the next stage of planning and policy development. But the fact is, it is a live document, as Claire was quite rightly said, and Richard reinforced. And it will constantly change and adapt to suit the environment that we operate in, and our residents in particular, how they live their lives. And this hopefully not only plans for the future of Charnwood, but also supports the way that we operate, the way that we live, the way that our children and families are educated. And this is as much a working document and a living document as it is actually a plan for development. So with that, I'm going to make recommendations. Let's get this right. Recommendations 1 to 8 for the reasons given 1 to 8 in the main paper. On pages 10 to 11, and in addition, recommendation and reason on page 3 of the supplementary report, and also ask that we update in the main recommendation list items, I think 2, 4, and 6, to include the additional reference, apart from the cabinet lead member, but also the leader as well. And with that, I'm going to ask Councillor Smirvich to second.
So I am really pleased to be able to second this leader.
Thank you very much, Councillor. Thank you very much. So, can I see all of those in favour? That's everyone. Thank you very much. So we have no votes against, and as a result, good luck to the document as it passes to full council and beyond. Okay, thank you very much. So with that, we draw to the conclusion of this cabinet meeting this evening. Thank you very much. It's been slightly warm, slightly unusual being here. It's very odd actually sitting here thinking I need to click a button to unmute myself, and instead it's actually reaching for a button. We need to redesign all these seats. So it was much easier to do it by click of buttons on a mouse. But look, thank you very much also at the back of the room for joining us. Hopefully you found it very interesting. It's lovely to see somebody here, so thank you very much. And also this is our first official cabinet meeting, so in person for a long time, so really, really nice to see you. And thank you very much to the officer team as well, Chief Exec Karen, Eileen, Simon and Laura, and particularly to the planning team, Richard and Claire. Please pass back our thanks to the whole team. Many comments this evening supporting the work that they've done, but absolutely I appreciate the huge quantity of work that's gone into this on top of the day job as well. So thank you very, very much. And with that, I'm going to close the meeting. Thank you. Good night.